Cleveland Hardware fence. It looked like a stylized matte black daddy long legs. A red LED began to pulse at the sphere's equator. Its body was no larger than a baseball.
"Okay,"
she said.
"I hear you."
She stood up, favoring her left leg, and watched the little drone reverse. It picked its methodical way back across its girder and into darkness. She turned and looked back at the service area. The man in the orange jumpsuit was sealing the front of a white vacuum rig. She watched him ring and seal the helmet, pick up his console, and step back through the gap in the construction boat's hull. There was a rising whine of motors, and the thing slid smoothly out of sight on a 10-meter circle of flooring that sank away into a harsh glare of arc lamps. The red drone waited patiently at the edge of the hole left by the elevator panel. Then she was off after the Braun, threading her way between a forest of welded steel struts. The Braun winked its LED steadily, beckoning her on.
"How you doing, Case? You back in Garvey with Malcolm?"
"Sure.
And jacked into this. I like it, you know. Like I've always talked to myself in my head when I've been in tight spots. Pretend I got some friend, somebody I can trust, and I tell them what I really think, what I feel like, and then I'll pretend they're telling me what they think about that, and I'll just go along that way. Having you in is kind of like that. That scene with Ashpool."
She gnawed at her lower lip, swinging around a strut, keeping the drone in sight.
"I was expecting something maybe a little less gone, you know? I mean, these guys are all batshit in here, like they got luminous messages scrawled across the inside of their foreheads or something. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like the way it smells."
The drone was hoisting itself up a nearly invisible ladder of U-shaped steel rungs toward a narrow, dark opening.
"And while I'm feeling confessional, baby, I gotta admit, maybe I never much expected to make it out of this one anyway. Been on this bad roll for a while, and you're the only good change come down since I signed on with Armitage."
She looked up at the black circle. The drone's LED winked, climbing.
"Not that you're all that shit hot."
She smiled, but it was gone too quickly, and she gritted her teeth at the stabbing pain in her leg as she began to climb. The ladder continued up through a metal tube, barely wide enough for her shoulders. She was climbing up out of gravity, toward the weightless axis. Her chip pulsed the time. 04:23:04. It had been a long day. The clarity of her sensorium cut the bite of the beta-phenethylamine, but Case could still feel it. He preferred the pain in her leg.
"Case, 0000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000
climbing mechanically. The zeros strobed again, and a message stuttered there, in the corner of her vision, chopped up by the display circuit. General Gerling, trained Corto for Screaming Fist, and sold his ass to the Pentagon. Wintermute's primary grip on Armitage is a construct of Gerling. Wintermute says A's mention of G means he's cracking. Watch your ass, Dixie.
Well, she said, pausing, taking all of her weight on her right leg. Guess you got problems, too.
She looked down. There was a faint circle of light, no larger than the brass round of the chub key that dangled between her breasts. She looked up. Nothing at all. She tongued her amps and the tube rose into vanishing perspective, the brawn picking its way up the rungs.
Nobody told me about this part, she said.
Case jacked out.
Malcolm. Mon, your boss man gone very strange.
The Zionite was wearing a blue Sanyo vacuum suit, 20 years older than the one Case had rented in Freeside, its helmet under his arm, and his dreadlocks bagged in a net cap crocheted from purple cotton yarn. His eyes were slitted with ganja and tension.
"Keep calling down here with orders, mon, but be some Babylon war."
Malcolm shook his head.
"Arol and I talking, and Arol talking with Zion. Founders say cut and run."
He ran the back of a large brown hand across his mouth.
"Armitage?"
Case winced as the beta-phenethylamine hangover hit him with its full intensity, unscreened by the Matrix or Simstim. "Brain's got no nerves in it," he told himself. "It can't really feel this bad."
"What do you mean, man? He's giving you orders? What?"
"Mon, Armitage, he telling me set course for Finland, you know? He telling me there be hope, you know? Come on my screen with his shirt all blood, mon, and be crazy as some dog, talking screaming fists and rushing, and the blood of the betrayer shall be on our hands."
He shook his head again, the dread cap swaying and bobbing in zero-g, his lips narrowed.
"Founder said a mute voice be false prophet, surely, and Errol and I must abandon Marcus Garvey and return."
"Armitage, he was wounded? Blood?"
"Can't say, you know. But blood and stone crazy, Case."
"Okay," Case said. "So what about me? You're going home. What about me, Malcolm?"
"Mon," Malcolm said, "you coming with me. I and I come Zion with Arol, Babylon Rocker. Leave Mr. Armitage to talk with Ghost Cassette, one ghost another."
Case glanced over his shoulder. His rented suit swung against the hammock where he'd snapped it, swaying in the air current from the old Russian scrubber. He closed his eyes. He saw the sacks of toxin dissolving in his arteries. He saw Molly hauling herself up the endless steel rungs. He opened his eyes.
"I don't know, man,"
he said, a strange taste in his mouth. He looked down at his desk, at his hands.
"I don't know."
He looked back up. The brown face was calm now, intent. Malcolm's chin was hidden by the high helmet ring of his old blue suit.
"She's inside," he said. "Molly's inside. In Straylight, it's called. If there's any Babylon man, that's it. We leave on her, she ain't coming out. Step and razor or not."
Malcolm nodded, the dread bag bobbing behind him like a captive balloon of crocheted cotton.
"She you woman, Case?"
"I don't know. Nobody's woman, maybe."
He shrugged and found his anger again, real as a shard of hot rock beneath his ribs.
"Fuck this," he said. "Fuck Armitage. Fuck Wintermute and fuck you. I'm staying right here."
Malcolm's smile spread across his face like light breaking.
"Malcolm a rude boy, Case. Garvey Malcolm boat."
His gloved hand slapped a panel, and the bass-heavy rock-steady of Zion dub came pulsing from the tug's speakers.
"Malcolm not running, no. I talk with Arrow. He's certain to see it in similar light."
Case stared.
"I don't understand you guys at all," he said.
"Don't stand you, mon,"
the Zionite said, nodding to the beat.
"But we must move by jaw love, each one."
Case jacked in and flipped for the Matrix.
"Get my wire?"
"Yeah." He saw that the Chinese program had grown. Delicate arches of shifting polychrome were nearing the TA ice.
"Well, it's getting stickier," the flatline said. "Your boss wiped the bank on that other Hosaka and damn near took ours with it. But your pal Wintermute put me on to something there before it went black. The reason Straylight's not exactly hopping with Tessier ash pools is that they're mostly in cold sleep. There's a law firm in London keeps track of their powers of attorney, has to know who's awake and exactly when. Armitage was routing the transmissions from London to Straylight through the Hosaka on the yacht. Incidentally, they know the old man's dead.
Who knows?
The law firm and TA. He had a medical remote planted in his sternum. Not that your girl's dart would have left a resurrection crew with much to work with. Shellfish toxin. But the only TA awake in Straylight right now is Lady Three Jane Marie France. There's a male, couple years older, in Australia on business. You ask me, I bet Wintermute found a way to cause that business to need this Eight Jean's personal attention. But he's on his way home, or near as matters. The London lawyers give his Straylight ETA as 090000 tonight. We slotted Quang Virus at 023203. It's 044520. Best estimate for Quang penetration of the TA core is 083000, or a hair on either side. I figure Wintermute's got something going with this Three Jane, or else she's just as crazy as her old man was. But the boy up from Melbourne'll know the score. The Straylight security systems keep trying to go full alert, but Wintermute blocks them. Don't ask me how. Couldn't override the basic gate program to get Molly in, though. Armitage had a record of all that on his Osaka. Riviera must have talked Three Jane into doing it. She's been able to fiddle entrances and exits for years. Looks to me like one of TA's main problems is that every family bigwig has riddled the banks with all kinds of private scams and exceptions. Kind of like your immune system falling apart on you, ripe for virus. Looks good for us, once we're past that ice.
Okay. But Wintermute said that arm...
A white lozenge snapped into position, filled with a close-up of mad blue eyes. Case could only stare. Colonel Willie Corto, Special Forces, Strike Force Screaming Fist, had found his way back. The image was dim, jerky, badly focused. Corto was using the Haniwa's navigation deck to link with the Hosaka in Marcus Garvey.
Case, I need the damage reports on Omaha Thunder.
Say, I... Colonel?
Hang in there, boy. Remember your training.
But where have you been, man? He silently asked the anguished eyes. Wintermute had built something called Armitage into a catatonic fortress named Corto. Had convinced Corto that Armitage was the real thing, and Armitage had walked, talked, schemed, bartered data for capital, fronted for Wintermute in that room in the Chiba Hilton, and now Armitage was gone, blown away by the winds of Corto's madness. But where had Corto been those years? Falling, burned and blinded, out of a Siberian sky.
Case, this will be difficult for you to accept. I know that. You're an officer. The training, I understand. But Case, as God is my witness, we have been betrayed.
Tears started from the blue eyes.
Colonel, who? Who's betrayed us?
General Gerling, Case. You may know him by a code name. You do know the man of whom I speak.
Yeah,
Case said, as the tears continued to flow.
I guess I do, sir,
he added on impulse.
But, sir, Colonel, what exactly should we do? Now, I mean.
Our duty at this point, Case, lies in flight. Escape. Evasion. We can make the Finnish border. Nightfall tomorrow. Treetop flying on manual. Seat of the pants, boy. But that will only be the beginning.
The blue eyes slitted above tanned cheekbones slick with tears.
Only the beginning. Betrayal from above. From above!
He stepped back from the camera, dark stains on his torn twill shirt. Armitage's face had been mask-like, impassive, but Corto's was the true schizoid mask, illness etched deep. In involuntary muscle, distorting the expensive surgery.
Colonel, I hear you, man. Listen, Colonel, okay? I want you to open the, shit, what's it called, Dix?
The mid-bay lock,
the flatline said.
Open the mid-bay lock. Just tell your central console there to open it, right? We'll be up there with you fast, Colonel. Then we can talk about getting out of here.
The lozenge vanished.
Boy, I think you just lost me there, the flatline said.
The toxins, Case said. The fucking toxins.
And jacked out.
Poison?
Malcolm watched over the scratched blue shoulder of his old Sanyo as Case struggled out of the G-web.
And get this goddamn thing off me.
Tugging at the Texas catheter.
Like a slow poison. And that asshole upstairs knows how to counter it, and now he's crazier than a shithouse rat.
He fumbled with the front of the red Sanyo, forgetting how to work the seals.
Boss man, he poison you?
Malcolm scratched his cheek.
Got a medical kit, you know.
Malcolm, Christ, help me with this goddamn suit.
The Zionite kicked off from the pink pilot module.
Easy, mon. Measure twice, cut once, wise man put it. We get up there.
There was air in the corrugated gangway that led from Marcus Garvey's aft lock to the mid-bay lock of the yacht called Haniwa, but they kept their suit sealed. Malcolm executed the passage with balletic grace, only pausing to help Case, who'd gone into an awkward tumble as he'd stepped out of Garvey. The white plastic sides of the tube filtered the raw sunlight. There were no shadows. Garvey's airlock hatch was patched and pitted, decorated with the laser-carved Lion of Zion. Haniwa's mid-bay hatch was creamy gray, blank and pristine. Malcolm inserted a gloved hand in a narrow recess. Case saw his fingers move. Red LEDs came to life in the recess, counting down from 50. Malcolm withdrew his hand. Case, with one glove braced against the hatch, felt the vibration of the lock mechanism through his suit and bones. The round segment of gray hull began to withdraw into the side of Haniwa. Malcolm grabbed the recess with one hand and Case with the other. The lock took them with it. Haniwa was a product of the Dornier Fujitsu Yards, her interior informed by a design philosophy similar to the one that had produced the Mercedes that had chauffeured them through Istanbul. The narrow mid-bay was walled in imitation ebony veneer and floored with gray Italian tiles. Case felt as though he were invading some rich man's private spa by way of the shower. The yacht, which had been assembled in orbit, had never been intended for re-entry. Her smooth, wasp-like line was simply styling, and everything about her interior was calculated to add to the overall impression of speed. When Malcolm removed his battered helmet, Case followed his lead. They hung there in the lock, breathing air that smelled faintly of pine. Under it, a disturbing edge of burning insulation. Malcolm sniffed.
Trouble here, man. Any boat you smell that?
A door, padded with dark gray ultra-suede, slid smoothly back into its housing. Malcolm kicked off the ebony wall and sailed neatly through the narrow opening, twisting his broad shoulders at the last possible instant for clearance. Case followed him clumsily, hand over hand, along a waist-high padded rail.
Bridge,
Malcolm said, pointing down a seamless, cream-walled corridor.
Be there.
He launched himself with another effortless kick. From somewhere ahead, Case made out the familiar chatter of a printer turning out hard copy. It grew louder as he followed Malcolm through another doorway, into a swirling mass of tangled printout. Case snatched a length of twisted paper and glanced at it.
000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000
gloved finger at the column of zeros.
No,
Case said, grabbing for his drifting helmet.
The flatline said Armitage wiped the Hosaka he had in there.
Smell like he wipe 'em with laser, you know,
The Zionite braced his foot against the white cage of a Swiss exercise machine and shot through the floating maze of paper, batting it away from his face.
Case, man.
The man was small, Japanese, his throat bound to the back of a narrow articulated chair with a length of some sort of fine steel wire. The wire was invisible, where it crossed the black temper foam of the headrest, and it had cut as deeply into his larynx. A single sphere of dark blood had congealed there, like some strange precious stone, a red-black pearl. Case saw the crude wooden handles that drifted at either end of the garrote, like worn sections of broom handle.
"Wonder how long he had that on him,"
Case said, remembering Corto's post-war pilgrimage.
"He know how pilot boat, Case, boss man?"
"Maybe. He was special forces."
"Well, this Japan boy, he not be pilotin'. Doubt I pilot her easy myself. Ver new boat."
"So find us the bridge."
Malcolm frowned, rolled backward, and kicked. Case followed him into a larger space, a kind of lounge, shredding and crumpling the lengths of printout that snared him in his passage. There were more of the articulated chairs here, something that resembled a bar, and the hosaka. The printer, still spewing its flimsy tongue of paper, was an inbuilt bulkhead unit, a neat slot in a panel of hand-rubbed veneer. He pulled himself over the circle of chairs and reached it, punching a white stud to the left of the slot. The chattering stopped. He turned and stared at the hosaka. Its face had been drilled through at least a dozen times. The holes were small, circular, edges blackened. Tiny spheres of bright alloy were orbiting the dead computer.
"Good guess,"
he said to Malcolm.
"Bridge locked, man,"
Malcolm said, from the opposite side of the lounge. The lights dimmed, surged, dimmed again. Case ripped the printout from its slot. More zeros.
"Wintermute?"
He looked around the beige and brown lounge, the space scrawled with drifting curves of paper.
"That you on the lights, Wintermute?"
A panel beside Malcolm's head slid up, revealing a small monitor. Malcolm jerked apprehensively, wiped sweat from his forehead with a foam patch on the back of a gloved hand, and swung to study the display.
"You read Japanese, man?"
Case could see figures blinking past on the screen.
"No,"
Case said.
"Bridge is escape pod. Lifeboat. Counting down, looks like it. Suit up now."
He ringed his helmet and slapped at the seals.
"What? He's taken off? Shit!"
He kicked off from the bulkhead and shot through the tangle of printout.
"We gotta open this door, man!"
But Malcolm could only tap the side of his helmet. Case could see his lips moving through the Lexan. He saw a bead of sweat arc out from the rainbow-braided band of the purple cotton net the Zionite wore over his locks. Malcolm snatched the helmet from Case and ringed it for him smoothly, the palms of his gloves smacking the seals. Micro-LED monitors to the left of the faceplate lit as the neck ring connections closed.
"No say Japanese," Malcolm said, over his suit's transceiver. "But countdown's wrong."
He tapped a particular line on the screen.
"Seals not intact. Bridge module. Launching with lock open."
"Armitage!"
Case tried to pound on the door. The physics of zero-G sent him tumbling back through the printout.
"Corto, don't do it! We gotta talk! We gotta—"
"Case? Read you, Case."
The voice barely resembled Armitage's now. It held a weird calm. Case stopped kicking. His helmet struck the far wall.
"I'm sorry, Case, but it has to be this way. One of us has to get out. One of us has to testify. If we all go down here, it ends here. I'll tell them, Case. I'll tell them all of it. About Girling and the others. And I'll make it, Case. I know I'll make it. To Helsinki."
There was a sudden silence. Case felt it fill his helmet like some rare gas.
But it's so hard, Case. So goddamn hard. I'm blind.
Corto, stop. Wait. You're blind, man. You can't fly. You'll hit the fucking trees. And they're trying to get you, Corto, I swear to God. They've left your hatch open. You'll die, and you'll never get to tell them. And I gotta get the enzyme. Name of the enzyme. The enzyme, man!
He was shouting, voice high with hysteria. Feedback shrilled out of the helmet's phone pads. Remember the training, Case. That's all we can do. And then the helmet filled with a confused babble, roaring static, harmonics howling down the ears from Screaming Fist, fragments of Russian, and then a stranger's voice, Midwestern, very young.
We are down. Repeat. Omaha Thunder is down. We...
Wintermute!
Case screamed.
Don't do this to me!
Tears broke from his lashes, rebounding off the faceplate in wobbling crystal droplets. Then Haniwa thudded, once, shivered, as if some huge soft thing had struck her hull. Case imagined the lifeboat jolting free, blown clear by explosive bolts, a second's clawing hurricane of escaping air tearing mad Colonel Corto from his couch, from Wintermute's rendition of the final minute of Screaming Fist.
"Im gone, man."
Malcolm looked at the monitor.
"Hatch open. Mute must override ejection failsafe."
Case tried to wipe the tears of rage from his eyes. His fingers clacked against Lexan.
"Yacht, she tight for air. But boss man taken grapple control with bridge. Marcus Garvey still stuck."
But Case was seeing Armitage's endless fall around Freeside, through vacuum colder than the steps. For some reason, he imagined him in his dark Burberry, the trench coat's rich folds spread out around him, like the wings of some huge bat. Chapter 17.
"Get what you went for?"
the construct asked. Quang grade Mark 11 was filling the grid between itself and the TA ice with hypnotically intricate traceries of rainbow, lattices fine as snow crystal on a winter window.
"Wintermute killed Armitage. Blew him out in a lifeboat with a hatch open."
"Tough shit," the flatline said. "Weren't exactly asshole buddies, were you?"
"He knew how to unbond the toxin sacks."
"So Wintermute knows, too. Count on it."
"I don't exactly trust Wintermute to give it to me."
The construct's hideous approximation of laughter scraped Case's nerves like a dull blade.
"Maybe that means you're getting smart."
He hit the SimStim switch. 06-2752 by the chip in her optic nerve. Case had been following her progress through Villa Straylight for over an hour, letting the endorphin analog she'd taken blot out his hangover. The pain in her leg was gone. She seemed to move through a warm bath. The brawn drone was perched on her shoulder, its tiny manipulators, like padded surgical clips, secure in the polycarbon of the modern suit. The walls here were raw steel, striped with rough brown ribbons of epoxy where some kind of covering had been ripped away. She'd hidden from a work crew, crouching, the Fletcher cradled in her hands, her suit steel gray, while the two slender Africans and their balloon-tired work cart passed. The men had shaven heads and wore orange coveralls. One was singing softly to himself in a language Case had never heard, the tones and melody alien and haunting. The head's speech, Three Jane's essay on Straylight, came back to him as she worked her way deeper into the maze of the place. Straylight was crazy. Was craziness grown in the resin concrete they'd mixed from pulverized lunar stone, grown in welded steel and tons of knickknacks, all the bizarre impedimenta they'd shipped up the well to line their winding nest? But it wasn't a craziness he understood. Not like Armitage's madness, which he now imagined he could understand. Twist a man far enough, then twist him as far back in the opposite direction, reverse and twist again, The man broke, like breaking a length of wire, and history had done that for Colonel Corto. History had already done the really messy work when Wintermute found him, sifting him out of all the war's ripe detritus, gliding into the man's flat gray field of consciousness like a water spider crossing the face of some stagnant pool, the first messages blinking across the face of a child's micro in a darkened room in a French asylum. Wintermute had built Armitage up from scratch, with Corto's memories of Screaming Fist as the foundation. But Armitage's memories wouldn't have been Corto's after a certain point. Case doubted if Armitage had recalled the betrayal, the Nightwings whirling down in flame. Armitage had been a sort of edited version of Corto, and when the stress of the run had reached a certain point, the Armitage mechanism had crumbled. Corto had surfaced, with his guilt and his sick fury. And now Corto Armitage was dead, a small frozen moon for Freeside. He thought of the toxin sacks. Old Ashpool was dead too, drilled through the eye with Molly's microscopic dart, deprived of whatever expert overdose he'd mixed for himself. That was a more puzzling death, Ashpool's, the death of a mad king. And he'd killed the puppet he'd called his daughter, the one with Three Jane's face. It seemed to Case, as he rode Molly's broadcast sensory input through the corridors of Straylight, that he'd never really thought of anyone like Ashpool, anyone as powerful as he imagined Ashpool had been, as human. Power, in Case's world, meant corporate power. The Zaibatsus, the multinationals that shaped the course of human history, had transcended old barriers. Viewed as organisms, they had attained a kind of immortality. You couldn't kill a Zaibatsu by assassinating a dozen key executives. There were others waiting to step up the ladder, assume the vacated position, access the vast banks of corporate memory. But Tessier Ashpool wasn't like that, and he sensed the difference in the death of its founder. T.A. was an atavism, a clan. He remembered the litter of the old man's chamber, the soiled humanity of it, the ragged spines of the old audio discs in their paper sleeves, one foot bare, the other in a velvet slipper. The brawn plucked at the hood of the modern suit, and Molly turned left, through another archway. Wintermute and the Nest. Phobic vision of the hatching wasps, time-lapse machine gun of biology. But weren't the Zaibatsus more like that, or the Yakuza? Hives, with cybernetic memories, vast single organisms, their DNA coated in silicon? If Straylight was an expression of the corporate identity of Tessier Ashpool, then T.A. was crazy as the old man had been. The same ragged tangle of fears, the same strange sense of aimlessness. If they'd turned into what they wanted to, he remembered Molly saying. But Wintermute had told her they hadn't. Case had always taken it for granted that the real bosses, the kingpins in a given industry, would be both more and less than people. He'd seen it in the men who'd crippled him in Memphis. He'd seen Wage affect the semblance of it in Night City, and it had allowed him to accept Armitage's flatness and lack of feeling. He'd always imagined it as a gradual and willing accommodation of the machine, the system, the parent organism. It was the root of street cool, too, the knowing posture that implied connection, invisible lines up to hidden levels of influence. But what was happening now in the corridors of Villa Straylight? Whole stretches were being stripped back to steel and concrete. "Wonder where our Peter is now, huh? Maybe see that boy soon," she muttered. "And Armitage, where's he, Case?" "Dead," he said, knowing she couldn't hear him. "He's dead." He flipped. The Chinese program was face-to-face with the target ice, rainbow tints gradually dominated by the green of the rectangle representing the TA cores, arches of emerald across the colorless void.
"How's it go, Dixie?"
"Fine. Too slick.
Thing's amazing. Should have had one that time in Singapore. Did the old New Bank of Asia for a good 50th of what they were worth. But that's ancient history. This baby takes all the drudgery out of it. Makes you wonder what a real war would be like now.
If this kind of shit was on the street, we'd be out of job,
Case said. You wish. Wait till you're steering that thing upstairs through black ice.
Sure.
Something small and decidedly non-geometric had just appeared on the far end of one of the emerald arches.
Dixie?
Yeah, I see it.
Don't know if I believe it.
A brownish dot, a dull gnat against the green wall of the TA cores. It began to advance across the bridge built by Quang Grade Mark 11, and Case saw that it was walking. As it came, the green section of the arch extended, the polychrome of the virus program rolling back a few steps ahead of the cracked black shoes.
Gotta hand it to you, boss,
the flatline said, when the short, rumpled figure of the Finn seemed to stand a few meters away.
I never seen anything this funny when I was alive.
But the eerie non-laugh didn't come.
I never tried it before,
the Finn said, showing his teeth, his hands bunched in the pockets of his frayed jacket.
You killed Armitage,
Case said.
Corto, yeah. Armitage was already gone. Had to do it. I know, you want to get the enzyme. Okay, no sweat. I was the one gave it to Armitage in the first place. I mean, I told him what to use. But I think maybe it's better to let the deal stand. You got enough time. I'll give it to you. Only a couple of hours now, right?
Case watched blue smoke billow in cyberspace as the Finn lit up one of his Partagas.
You guys, the Finn said, you're a pain. The flatline here, if you were all like him, it'd be real simple. He's a construct, just a bunch of ROM, so he always does what I expect him to. My projection said there wasn't much chance of Molly wandering in on Ashpool's big exit scene, give you one example.
He sighed.
Why'd he kill himself?
Case asked.
Why's anybody kill himself?
The figure shrugged.
I guess I know, if anybody does, but it would take me 12 hours to explain the various factors in his history and how they interrelate. He was ready to do it for a long time, but he kept going back into the freezer. Christ, he was a tedious old fuck.
The Finn's face wrinkled with disgust.
It's all tied in with why he killed his wife, mainly. You want the short reason. But what sent him over the edge for good and all? Little Three Jane figured a way to fiddle the program that controlled his cryogenic system. Subtle, too. So basically she killed him. Except he figured he'd killed himself. And your friend the Avenging Angel figures she got him with an eyeball full of shellfish juice.
The Finn flicked his butt away into the matrix below.
Well, actually, I guess I did give Three Jane the odd hint. A little of the old how-to, you know?
Wintermute, Case said, choosing the words carefully.
You told me you were just a part of something else. Later on you said you wouldn't exist if the run goes off and Molly gets the word into the right slot.
The thin, streamlined skull nodded.
Okay, then who are we going to be dealing with then? If Armitage is dead and you're going to be gone, just who exactly is going to tell me how to get these fucking toxin sacks out of my system? Who's going to get Molly back out of there? I mean, where exactly are all our asses going to be? We cut you loose from the hardwiring.
The Finn took a wooden toothpick from his pocket and regarded it critically, like a surgeon examining a scalpel.
Good question, he said finally. You know, salmon, kind of fish? These fish, see, they're compelled to swim upstream. Got it?
No, Case said.
Well, I'm under compulsion myself, and I don't know why. If I were going to subject you to my very own thoughts, let's call them speculations, on the topic,
It would take a couple of your lifetimes, because I've given it a lot of thought. And I just don't know. But when this is over, we do it right, I'm going to be part of something bigger. Much bigger.
The Finn glanced up and around the Matrix.
But the parts of me that are me now, that'll still be here, and you'll get your payoff.
Case fought back an insane urge to punch himself forward and get his fingers around the figure's throat, just above the ragged knot in the rusty scarf, his thumbs deep in the Finn's larynx.
Well, good luck, the Finn said.
He turned, hands in pockets, and began trudging back up the green arch.
Hey, asshole,
the flatline said when the Finn had gone a dozen paces. The figure paused, half turned.
What about me? What about my payoff?
You'll get yours, it said.
What's that mean?
Case asked, as he watched the narrow tweed back recede.
I want to be erased, the construct said. I told you that, remember?
Straylight reminded Case of deserted early morning shopping centers he'd known as a teenager, low-density places where the small hours brought a fitful stillness, a kind of numb expectancy, a tension that left you watching insects swarm around caged bulbs above the entrance of darkened shops. Fringe places, just past the borders of the sprawl, too far from the all-night click and shudder of the hot core. There was that same sense of being surrounded by the sleeping inhabitants of a waking world he had no interest in visiting or knowing, of dull business temporarily suspended, of futility and repetition soon to wake again. Molly had slowed now, either knowing that she was nearing her goal or out of concern for her leg. The pain was starting to work its jagged way back through the endorphins, and he wasn't sure what that meant. She didn't speak, kept her teeth clenched, and carefully regulated her breathing. She'd passed many things that Case hadn't understood, but his curiosity was gone. There had been a room filled with shelves of books, a million flat leaves of yellowing paper pressed between bindings of cloth or leather, the shelves marked at intervals by labels that followed a code of letters and numbers, a crowded gallery where Case had stared, through Molly's incurious eyes, at a shattered, dust-stenciled sheet of glass, a thing labeled. Her gaze had tracked the brass plaque automatically. La marée misée à nous par ses célébrataires même. She'd reached out and touched this, her artificial nails clicking against the Lexan sandwich protecting the broken glass. There had been what was obviously the entrance to Tessier Ashpool's cryogenic compound, circular doors of black glass trimmed with chrome. She'd seen no one since the two Africans in their cart, and for Case, they'd taken on a sort of imaginary life. He pictured them gliding gently through the halls of Straylight, their smooth, dark skulls gleaming, nodding, while the one still sang his tired little song. And none of this was anything like the Villa Straylight he would have expected, some cross between Kath's fairy tale castle and a half-remembered childhood fantasy of the Yakuza's inner sanctum. 07:02:18. 1.5 hours.
Case, she said, I want a favor.
Stiffly, she lowered herself to sit on a stack of polished steel plates, the finish of each plate protected by an uneven coating of clear plastic. She picked at a rip in the plastic on the topmost plate, blade sliding from beneath thumb and forefinger.
Leg's not good, you know? Didn't figure any climb like that, and the endorphin won't cut it much longer. So maybe, just maybe, right? I got a problem here. What it is, if I buy it here, before Riviera does...
And she stretched her leg, kneaded the flesh of her thigh through modern polycarbon and Paris leather.
I want you to tell him. Tell him it was me. Got it? Just say, it was Molly. He'll know. Okay?
She glanced around the empty hallway, the bare walls. The floor here was raw lunar concrete, and the air smelled of resins.
Shit, man. I don't even know if you're listening.
Case. She winced, got to her feet, nodded.
What's he told you, man? Wintermute. He tell you about Marie France? She was the Tessier half, Three Jane's genetic mother. And of that dead puppet of Ashpool's, I guess. Can't figure why he'd tell me, down in that cubicle. Lot of stuff. Why he has to come on like the Finn or somebody. He told me that. It's not just a mask. It's like he uses real profiles as valves. Gears himself down to communicate with us. Called it a template. Model of personality.
She drew her Fletcher and limped away down the corridor. The bare steel and scabrous epoxy ended abruptly, replaced by what Case at first took to be a rough tunnel blasted from solid rock. Molly examined its edge, and he saw that in fact the steel was sheathed with panels of something that looked and felt like cold stone. She knelt and touched the dark sand spread across the floor of the imitation tunnel. It felt like sand, cool and dry, but when she drew her finger through it, it closed like a fluid, leaving the surface undisturbed. A dozen meters ahead, the tunnel curved. Harsh yellow light threw hard shadows on the seamed pseudo-rock of the walls. With a start, Case realized that the gravity here was near Earth normal, which meant that she'd had to descend again after the climb. He was thoroughly lost now. Spatial disorientation held a peculiar horror for cowboys. But she wasn't lost, he told himself. Something scurried between her legs and went ticking across the unsand of the floor. A red LED blinked. The Braun. The first of the holos waited just beyond the curve, a sort of triptych. She lowered the Fletcher before Case had had time to realize that the thing was a recording. The figures were caricatures in light, life-size cartoons. Molly, Armitage, and Case. Molly's breasts were too large, visible through tight black mesh beneath a heavy leather jacket. Her waist was impossibly narrow. Silvered lenses covered half her face. She held an absurdly elaborate weapon of some kind, a pistol shape nearly lost beneath a flanged overlay of scope sights, silencers, flash hiders. Her legs were spread, pelvis canted forward, her mouth fixed in a leer of idiotic cruelty. Beside her, Armitage stood rigidly at attention in a threadbare khaki uniform. His eyes, Case saw, as Molly stepped carefully forward, were tiny monitor screens, each one displaying the blue-gray image of a howling waste of snow, the stripped black trunks of evergreens bending in silent winds. She passed the tips of her fingers through Armitage's television eyes, then turned to the figure of Case. Here, it was as if Riviera, and Case had known instantly that Riviera was responsible, had been unable to find anything worthy of parody. The figure that slouched there was a fair approximation of the one he glimpsed daily in mirrors. Thin, high-shouldered, a forgettable face beneath short dark hair. He needed a shave, but then he usually did. Molly stepped back. She looked from one figure to another. It was a static display, the only movement the silent gusting of the black trees in Armitage's frozen Siberian eyes.
"Trying to tell us something, Peter?"
she asked softly. Then she stepped forward and kicked at something between the feet of the holo Molly. Metal clinked against the wall, and the figures were gone. She bent and picked up a small display unit.
"Guess he can jack into these and program them direct," she said, tossing it away.
She passed the source of yellow light, an archaic incandescent globe set into the wall, protected by a rusty curve of expansion grating. The style of the improvised fixture suggested childhood somehow. He remembered fortresses he'd built with other children, on rooftops and in flooded sub-basements. A rich kid's hideout, he thought. This kind of roughness was expensive. what they called atmosphere. She passed a dozen more holograms before she reached the entrance to Three Jane's apartments. One depicted the eyeless thing in the alley behind the spice bazaar as it tore itself free of Riviera's shattered body. Several others were scenes of torture, the inquisitors always military officers, and the victims invariably young women. These had the awful intensity of Riviera's show at the 20th siècle, as though they had been frozen in the blue flash of orgasm. Molly looked away as she passed them. The last was small and dim, as if it were an image Riviera had had to drag across some private distance of memory and time. She had to kneel to examine it. It had been projected from the vantage point of a small child. None of the others had had backgrounds. The figures, uniforms, instruments of torture had all been freestanding displays, but this was a view. A dark wave of rubble rose against a colorless sky. Beyond its crest, the bleached, half-melted skeletons of city towers. The rubble wave was textured like a net, rusting steel rods twisted gracefully as fine string, vast slabs of concrete still clinging there. The foreground might once have been a city square. There was a sort of stump, something that suggested a fountain. At its base, the children and the soldier were frozen. The tableau was confusing at first. Molly must have read it correctly before Case had quite assimilated it, because he felt her tense. She spat, then stood. Children. Feral, in rags. Teeth glittering like knives. Sores on their contorted faces. The soldier on his back. Mouth and throat open to the sky. They were feeding.
Bon,
she said, something like gentleness in her voice.
Quite the product, aren't you, Peter? But you had to be. Our Three Jane, she's too jaded now to open the back door for just any petty thief. So Wintermute dug you up. The ultimate taste, if your taste runs that way. Demon lover. Peter.
She shivered.
But you talked her into letting me in. Thanks. Now we're gonna party.
And then she was walking, strolling really, in spite of the pain, away from Riviera's childhood. She drew the Fletcher from its holster, snapped the plastic magazine out, pocketed that, and replaced it with another. She hooked her thumb in the neck of the modern suit and ripped it open to the crotch with a single gesture, her thumb blade parting the tough polycarbon like rotten silk. She freed herself from the arms and legs, the shredded remnants disguising themselves as they fell to the dark, false sand. Case noticed the music then, a music he didn't know, all horns and piano. The entrance to Three Jane's world had no door. It was a ragged 5-meter gash in the tunnel wall, uneven stairs leading down in a broad, shallow curve. Faint blue light, moving shadows, music.
Case?
She said, and paused, the Fletcher in her right hand. Then she raised her left, smiled, touched her open palm with a wet tongue tip, kissing him through the SimStim link.
Gotta go.
Then there was something small and heavy in her left hand, her thumb against a tiny stud, and she was descending. Chapter 18. She missed it by a fraction. She nearly cut it, but not quite. She went in just right, Case thought, the right attitude. It was something he could sense. Something he could have seen in the posture of another cowboy leaning into a deck, fingers flying across the board. She had it, the thing, the moves, and she'd pulled it all together for her entrance, pulled it together around the pain in her leg, and marched down Three Jane's stairs like she owned the place, elbow of her gun arm at her hip, forearm up, wrist relaxed, swaying the muzzle of the Fletcher with the studied nonchalance of a Regency duelist. It was a performance, It was like the culmination of a lifetime's observation of martial arts tapes, cheap ones, the kind Case had grown up on. For a few seconds, he knew. She was every badass hero. Sunny Mao in the old Shaw videos. Mickey Chiba. The whole lineage back to Lee and Eastwood. She was walking it the way she talked it. Lady Three Jane Marie-France Tessier Ashpool had carved herself a low country flush with the inner surface of Straylight's Hall, chopping away the maze of walls that was her legacy. She lived in a single room so broad and deep that its far reaches were lost to an inverse horizon, the floor hidden by the curvature of the spindle. The ceiling was low and irregular, done in the same imitation stone that walled the corridor. Here and there across the floor were jagged sections of wall, waist-high reminders of a labyrinth. There was a rectangular turquoise pool centered 10 meters from the foot of the stairway, its underwater floods the apartment's only source of light, or it seemed that way, to Case, as Molly took her final step. The pool threw shifting blobs of light across the ceiling above it. They were waiting by the pool. He'd known that her reflexes were souped up, jazzed by the neurosurgeons for combat, but he hadn't experienced them on the SimStim link. The effect was like tape run at half speed, a slow, deliberate dance choreographed to the killer instinct and years of training. She seemed to take the three of the men at a glance, the boy poised on the pool's high board, the girl grinning over her wine glass, and the corpse of Ashpool, his left socket gaping black and corrupt above his welcoming smile. He wore his maroon robe. His teeth were very white. The boy dove, slender, brown, his form perfect. The grenade left her hand before his hands could cut the water. Case knew the thing for what it was, as it broke the surface. A core of high explosive wrapped with 10 meters of fine, brittle steel wire. Her Fletcher whined as she sent a storm of explosive darts into Ashpool's face and chest, and he was gone, smoke curling from the pocked back of the empty, white-enameled pool chair. The muzzle swung for Three Jane as the grenade detonated, a symmetrical wedding cake of water rising, breaking, falling back. But the mistake had been made. Hideo didn't even touch her then. Her leg collapsed. In Garvey, Case screamed. "It took you long enough," Ribiera said as he searched her pockets. Her hands vanished at the wrists in a matte black sphere the size of a bowling ball. "I saw a multiple assassination in Ankara," he said, his fingers plucking things from her jacket. "A grenade job, in a pool. It seemed a very weak explosion, but they all died instantly of hydrostatic shock." Case felt her move her fingers experimentally. The material of the ball seemed to offer no more resistance than temper foam. The pain in her leg was excruciating, impossible. A red moire shifted in her vision. "I wouldn't move them if I were you." The interior of the ball seemed to tighten slightly. "It's a sex toy Jane bought in Berlin. Wiggle them long enough and it crushes them to a pulp. Variant of the material they make this flooring from. Something to do with the molecules, I suppose." "Are you in pain?" She groaned. "You seem to have injured your leg." His fingers found the flat packet of drugs in the left back pocket of her jeans. "Well, my last taste from Ali, and just in time." The shifting mesh of blood began to whirl. "Hideo," said another voice, a woman's. "She's losing consciousness. Give her something, for that and for the pain. She's very striking, don't you think, Peter? These glasses, are they a fashion where she comes from?" Cool hands, unhurried, with a surgeon's certainty, the sting of a needle. "I wouldn't know," Ribeiro was saying. "I've never seen her native habitat. They came and took me from Turkey." "The sprawl, yes. We have interests there. And once we sent Hideo.
My fault, really. I'd let someone in. A burglar. He took the family terminal.
She laughed.
I made it easy for him, to annoy the others. He was a pretty boy, my burglar. Is she waking, Hideo? Shouldn't she have more?
More and she would die, said a third voice. The blood mesh slid into black. The music returned, horns and piano. Dance music. Case. Jack. Out. After images of the flashed words danced across Malcolm's eyes and creased forehead as Case removed the trodes. You screamed, Mon, while ago.
Molly,
he said, his throat dry.
Got hurt.
He took a white plastic squeeze bottle from the edge of the G-web and sucked out a mouthful of flat water.
I don't like how any of this shit is going.
The little cray monitor lit. The fin against a background of twisted, impacted junk.
Neither do I. We got a problem.
Malcolm pulled himself up, over Case's head, twisted and peered over his shoulder.
Now who is that, Mon Case?
That's just a picture, Malcolm,
Case said wearily.
Guy I know in the sprawl. It's Wintermute talking. Pictures supposed to make us feel at home.
Bullshit, the Finn said. Like I told Molly, these aren't masks. I need 'em to talk to you, 'cause I don't have what you think of as a personality, much. But all that's just pissing in the wind, Case, 'cause like I just said, we got a problem.
So express thyself, Mute, Malcolm said.
Molly's leg's fallen off, for starts. Can't walk. How it was supposed to go down, she'd walk in, get Peter out of the way, talk the magic word out of 3 Jane, get up to the head and say it. Now she's blown it. So I want you two to go in after her.
Case stared at the face on the screen.
Us?
So who else?
Errol, Case said. The guy on Babylon Rocker. Malcolm's pal.
No, gotta be you. Gotta be somebody who understands Molly, who understands Riviera. Malcolm for muscle.
You maybe forget that I'm in the middle of a little run here, remember? What you hauled my ass out here for?
Case, listen up. Time's tight. Very tight. Listen. The real link between your deck and Straylight is a sideband broadcast over Garvey's navigation system. You'll take Garvey into a very private dock, I'll show you. The Chinese virus has completely penetrated the fabric of the Hosaka. There's nothing in the Hosaka but virus now. When you dock, the virus will be interfaced with the Straylight custodial system and will cut the sideband. You'll take your deck, the flatline, and Malcolm. You'll find 3 Jane, get the word out of her, kill Riviera, get the key from Molly. You can keep track of the program by jacking your deck into the Straylight system. I'll handle it for you. There's a standard jack in the back of the head, behind a panel with 5 zircons.
Kill Riviera?
Kill him.
Case blinked at the representation of the fin. He felt Malcolm put his hand on his shoulder.
Hey, you forgot something.
He felt the rage rising and a kind of glee.
You fucked up. You blew the controls on the grapples when you blew Armitage. Hani was got us good and tight. Armitage fried the other Hosaka and the mainframes went with the bridge, right?
The Finn nodded.
So we're stuck out here, and that means you're fucked, man.
He wanted to laugh, but it caught in his throat.
Case, Mon, Malcolm said softly. Garvey, a tug.
That's right, said the Finn, and smiled.
You having fun in the big world outside?
The construct asked when Case jacked back in.
Figured that was Wintermute requesting the pleasure.
Yeah, you bet. Quang okay?
Bang on. Killer virus.
Okay, got some snags, but we're working on it.
You want to tell me, maybe?
Don't have time.
Well, boy, never mind me. I'm just dead anyway.
Fuck off,
Case said, and flipped, cutting off the torn fingernail edge of the flatline's laughter.
She dreamed of a state involving very little in the way of individual consciousness,
3Jane was saying. She cupped a large cameo in her hand, extending it toward Molly. The carved profile was very much like her own.
Animal bliss. I think she viewed the evolution of the forebrain as a sort of sidestep.
She withdrew the brooch and studied it, tilting it to catch the light at different angles.
Only in certain heightened modes would an individual, a clan member, suffer the more painful aspects of self-awareness.
Molly nodded. Case remembered the injection. What had they given her? The pain was still there, but it came through as a tight focus of scrambled impressions. Neon worms writhing in her thigh, the touch of burlap, smell of frying krill. His mind recoiled from it. If he avoided focusing on it, the impressions overlapped, became a sensory equivalent of white noise. If it could do that to her nervous system, what would her frame of mind be? Her vision was abnormally clear and bright, even sharper than usual. Things seemed to vibrate, each person or object tuned to a minutely different frequency. Her hands, still locked in the black ball, were on her lap. She sat in one of the pool chairs, her broken leg propped straight in front of her on a camelskin hassock. 3Jane sat opposite, on another hassock, huddled in an oversized jalaba of unbleached wool. She was very young.
"Where'd he go?" Molly asked. "To take his shot?"
3Jane shrugged beneath the folds of the pale, heavy robe and tossed a strand of dark hair away from her eyes.
"He told me when to let you in," she said. "He wouldn't tell me why. Everything has to be a mystery. Would you have heard us?"
Case felt Molly hesitate.
"I would have killed him. I'd have tried to kill the ninja. Then I was supposed to talk with you."
"Why?"
3Jane asked, tucking the cameo back into one of the jalaba's inner pockets.
"And why? And what about?"
Molly seemed to be studying the high, delicate bones, the wide mouth, the narrow hawk nose. 3Jane's eyes were dark, curiously opaque.
"Because I hate him," she said at last. "And the why of that's just the way I'm wired. What he is, and what I am."
"And the show,"
3Jane said.
"I saw the show."
Molly nodded.
"But Hideo?"
"Because they're the best. Because one of them killed a partner of mine once."
3Jane became very grave. She raised her eyebrows.
"Because I had to see,"
Molly said.
"And then we would have talked, you and I, like this?"
Her dark hair was very straight, center-parted, drawn back into a knot of dull sterling.
"Shall we talk now?"
"Take this off,"
Molly said, raising her captive hands.
"You killed my father,"
3Jane said, no change whatever in her tone.
"I was watching on the monitors. My mother's eyes," he called them.
"He killed the puppet. It looked like you."
"He was fond of broad gestures," she said,
and then Riviera was beside her, radiant with drugs, in the seersucker convict outfit he'd worn in the roof garden of their hotel. "Getting acquainted? She's an interesting girl, isn't she? I thought so when I first saw her." He stepped past 3Jane. "It isn't going to work, you know."
"Isn't it, Peter?"
Molly managed a grin. "Wintermute won't be the first to have made the same mistake, underestimating me." He crossed the tiled pool border to a white enamel table and splashed mineral water into a heavy crystal highball glass. "He talked with me, Molly. I suppose he talked to all of us, you and Case, whatever there is of Armitage to talk to. He can't really understand us, you know. He has his profiles, but those are only statistics. You may be the statistical animal, darling, and Case is nothing but I possess a quality unquantifiable by its very nature.
He drank.
And what exactly is that, Peter?
Molly asked, her voice flat. Riviera.